Thanks for tuning into the Glossy Podcast. I'm your host, Jill Manoff, and today I welcome Kelly Byrne, who is Nasty Gal's commercial director and a member of the Boohoo team for going on 10 years. Nasty Gal is on a mission to become a more sustainable brand, so I wanted to ask Kelly about the specific goals and plans, plus to what extent a company can be both eco-conscious and trend-driven. Hi, Kelly. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Tell me about your position, commercial director. What do you do on the daily?
what don't I do? I guess my job ultimately, if you were to summarize it in one line, is to ensure the business reaches its commercial goals. So looking after numerous departments across the business to ensure, I suppose, we're all working collaboratively and cohesively and producing the sort of the right end goal for the business to drive the business forward.
For sure. Well, before we jump into sustainability, tell me about the year that you're coming out of, the pandemic's impact on the business. I know people were becoming more, I guess, price conscious, but they, I don't know, were you changing up your product to accommodate the comfort? What was the impact? There are a lot of threads we can pull there.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a year, hasn't it? For more than a year. I mean, it's been 18 months, I think, for most people. And, you know, I suppose we're an international business. We operate globally. So, you know, we've still got customers in markets like Australia that have just recently gone back into a fairly strict lockdown, whereas most of our other markets are sort of on their way out of lockdown. So it's been a real strange year for us. You know, Nasty Gal as a business has really prided itself on festival collections, vacation shops, you know, Thanksgiving, you know, none of those occasions have happened this year. So we've definitely found that our customer's gone a lot more casual. She's sort of chosen comfort for the last year. But what's been really nice to see is from about March this year, we've started to see a real sort of uptick in those traditional sort of summer categories. So swimwear, beachwear. People are buying shoes again, people are buying dresses again, and that's just amazing for us to see as a business because it sort of gives a lot of positivity that you know, people are getting a little bit back to normal and those traditional sort of shopping behaviours are coming back and it's not just all about sweatpants and t-shirts anymore and people are wanting to get a little bit more dressed up. I think the trends will stay a little bit more casual, I guess. I think people are just used to a bit more of a comfortable way of dressing now, but we are, as a group are definitely seeing a big upsurge in, you know, in those summer categories, which is very welcome.
Yes. Talk about the benefit, the perks of Nasty Gal being under the Boohoo umbrella, having that, I guess, yeah, network, larger corporation, in terms of being able to adapt to the ups and downs of the industry.
Yeah. So I suppose we're in a very fortunate place with Nasty Gal because the Boohoo group infrastructure is so solid and so vast that we've now, you know, we're now a group of 13 brands. And what we've been able to do is acquire those brands and sort of plug them into this infrastructure, which, you know, is all the very unsexy stuff, customer service, logistics, deliveries, you know, HR, finance, that's all set up for us. So it's almost a little bit of like a plug and play model, you know, so we can go and acquire these brands. And of course, so much work needs to go into the brand identity and the marketing side. But I suppose all those really supporting elements that you need to get a business off the ground are already there for us to tap into and allows us to sort of really take advantage of having that global distribution network and that 24/7 operation.
How quickly were you able to lean into the kind of the trends that we saw during the pandemic, like the sweatpants, the sweatsuits, comfort? Non-going-out-wear. That's what I know Nasty Gal as, but go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, very fortunate because we've got these 13 brands and we've got a global supply base. We've got a lot of power, I guess, as a group from a buying point of view into certain product trends. And we can probably react around 3 to 4 weeks, which allowed us to really, you know, sort of capitalize, I guess, on what the world was going through at that time and allow us to really react to what our customers were asking for at that time, which was those more casual trends. And, you know, then she's not waiting for weeks and weeks to get it. I mean, it's something that we always stock as part of our brands anyway. There's always a casual offer on there. But it just meant that when she didn't stop buying casual and it got more casual as the months went by, we sort of had that product in stock already then to sort of satisfy that demand in the market.
Your international network or distribution, I mean, I'm sure you faced hurdles in terms of deliveries, shipments. Was the timing just like, it was like overhauled in terms of the usual timing, and you just kind of said, how did you communicate that to customers? There's going to be a delay.
Yeah. I mean, we were really lucky that actually we kept all of our employees safe, but and adhered to all sort of social distancing rules and regulations in each market. But we managed to keep the operation fairly normal. Maybe sort of, you know, delivery times are pushed out a little bit, but I think it's just all around transparency and communication with customers. So if deliveries are going to be a little bit delayed, obviously letting them know by email, updating people on social. Our CS team were all over our social media feeds getting back to customers if their orders were going to be a little bit delayed. But I think we've weathered relatively quite well in comparison, and we've done quite well to sort of keep the wheels in motion and keep things going as quick as we have done.
Yep. There's been much buzz, and Glossy's addressed it a lot in our stories about the rise of the conscious consumer over the last, again, year and a half. Did you notice a shift in your consumer behavior and demands that has really driven some of these new sustainability initiatives?
So I think for Nasty Gal within the group, sustainable products has really been, I suppose, what the business was built on. So when the business was launched 15 years ago, it was actually started as a vintage brand. So that's always been very much the heart of our product, and our vintage collections are still to this day some of our fastest selling collections and what our customers expect. I think what we're seeing, and especially sort of tapping into our social network, is they want, our customers want more of that. So in the last year, we've really up the ante from a sustainable product point of view, and bringing, you know, we've now got monthly drops of sustainable product. And, you know, as you're aware, it's a real sort of part of our strategy moving forward to just sort of keep increasing this. So by the end of this financial year, 20% of our product offering will be more sustainably produced. And we've got very ambitious targets for the year after for that to be at around 40%. So it's definitely something that we're seeing as a trend, what our customers are telling us that they want. But I think, you know, we all know this is happening. I think the positive for us is, as being part of a group, you know, we've got 13 brands here, and we can use the size of our group for good here. And I think what we're seeing is customers, they want sustainable product, but price is still the most important factor to purchase in. So for us, it's about how do we democratize fashion and actually allow customers to get sustainable product that is affordable, and allow, you know, educate them in making the right choices. And again, going back to the size of the group with 13 brands, you know, you can really lead that and deliver that sort of more affordable fashion that is sustainable. I don't see how those two things can't be linked very, very closely together.
Yeah. What are you focusing on in terms of sustainability? Is it about the materials you're using? Is it about the development process, the packaging, maybe all of the above? But yeah, I'm sure it's not like you're sustainable. Yeah. That's that. Yeah. An ongoing process. But go ahead.
I mean, it's everything, isn't it? And I think, you know, you can't ship sustainable product in a non-sustainable packaging, you know, so the whole end-to-end process needs to be consistent and cohesive. I think, you know, this is such a growing area in every industry, you know, not just fashion, it's everywhere, I guess. And, you know, customers are becoming more educated and wiser, and I've got more expectation around this area. So we have to deliver that to our customer. But I think the one thing that I've seen in the last year is just how fast moving this is as well as an industry. So, you know, there's so many advances all the time in packaging, in carbon emissions, in so, you know, you can do so much in this space, and it's evolving all the time as technology is evolving. So I think it's not only producing more sustainable fabrics and products, it's also the sort of end-to-end process of how is that delivered? How is that packaged? What are the swing tags made out of? You know, we're even doing things like recycled jewelry collections, vegan footwear, you know, chrome-free leathers, which, you know, is again, that's another sort of growing area of a sustainable product offering. So it's amazing to see how much it's developed in the year, and I don't see this slowing down, and I don't see the customer's appetite for this kind of product slowing down either.
Yeah. Was it difficult in the last year while things are, again, haywire, Do you think that, like, establishing these new partners who are able to, whether it's new factories that are able to, create something sustainable for you, or just to find the right fabric, like facilitating a more sustainable product?
I think, you know, it is complicated because obviously you've got to do a lot of due diligence around the suppliers and how they operate. It's completely achievable, but it does take, you know, there's a big team here centrally that is their job day in, day out to ensure the people we're working with globally are operating sustainable, not only from the output of product, but how they run their factories. But, you know, we've obviously had to deal with a lot of challenges of COVID outbreaks globally and things like that. So there's many challenges at every step, but that's not wavered our commitment to getting this off the ground and, you know, progressing very fast with this.
Yeah. How are you able to message that a collection is more sustainable? What does the customer specifically want to know? And how are you ensuring you're not giving them maybe too much content and too much information to, I guess, make it very unsexy for those who, I don't know, but talk to me.
Yeah, it's an education, isn't it? You know, I learn things every single day. Like I found out from one of my colleagues a few weeks ago around, you know, plastic parcel bags, and actually plastic dispatch bags can be reused about 7 times, whereas cardboard, for example, can only be reused about 4 times. And actually there's a lot of carbon emissions in producing cardboard. So actually in that instance, plastic is a better solution, but you don't think about that. So it's about education. It's about tapping into different social networks that have all got their own part to play, you know. So our Instagram audience wants content in a different way to our Pinterest audience, to our LinkedIn audience. So, you know, it's about understanding the customer's needs on each channel and sort of pivoting and altering the content to make it connect with them. Definitely overload, you know, that you can be overloaded. So I think it's drip feeding. And I think just making it accessible. So obviously we've got a section of our website where we house all this. So if people want to know warts and all, everything, there's a place to go for that. But if you only just want short, snappy videos of where does that product come from? How's that produced? You know, what does organic cotton look like? I think what we're finding with our customers is, you know, they're happy to know that they've got a pair of organic denim jeans, but they want to know how many litres of water were used to produce this and what are dyes made out of. So that's where I think it's our opportunity to work with influencers and people like that to sort of tell that story on our behalf, because, you know, they have their own loyal followings as well, and their audience very much buys into what they say. So we're working with a lot of celebrities and influencers to sort of really help amplify that message and connect with their own audience in what our mission is on this agenda.
Yeah. Are you pivoting, I guess, which maybe you're working with new influencers whose focus is sustainability, in terms of saying this is a valid move? Yeah. Nasty Gal is really doing it. But tell me about the influencers you're working with.
It's funny because we've found a real shift, especially in the last 6 months. And, you know, maybe it's linked to COVID and people probably educating them a little bit more, themselves a little bit more on these sorts of issues. But, you know, we're finding influencers and celebrities that we're now working with that will only work with us on sustainable product collections. So that's been quite a shift. And, you know, that's one of the sort of, when we sort of engage in these conversations with people, it's, do you offer sustainable product? You know, I will only work with you if that's part of what the collection is. So that's been a really interesting shift. But I think, you know, we're just naturally seeing that the world is moving in this direction. So, you know, really what I want to see is that this just becomes part of everybody's DNA, you know, and a lot of the work that we're doing as a group is, I suppose, trying to lay the foundations for best practice globally. So every retailer can tap into this network of more sustainably produced product, and it just becomes the norm for customers. I suppose, just going back to what I said earlier, it's about doing that in an affordable way. You know, people can't afford to pay $200 for a pair of jeans. Our customers definitely can't. So it's, how can we produce more sustainable collections that are affordable for the type of price point our customers are used to paying?
Is it maybe a 20% hike in price? How does your sustainable collection compare?
it's really, you know, it's very different from category to category, but we're really not seeing a massive increase in prices. I think it's just as it's becoming the norm globally in the sort of production side, most retailers that are going to suppliers now are just expecting this as normal. So I think there's been a big shift on the supplier side that they know they have to produce in this way. And they're putting the infrastructure in themselves to be able to develop sustainable products. So we're seeing a marginal uplift, which still keeps it relatively affordable for customers.
Yes. Are the critics, I guess, coming your way? I've seen with brands that are known for being sustainable, maybe collaborating with H&M and getting backlash. And again, influencers who are known for their sustainability focus, recently linking with Mango. And I'm seeing the comments like, what? Yeah. They're not so sustainable. But what are you hearing? And how are you responding to that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you can't win them all, as people say. But I think I think it's about being honest. And, you know, I'm not going out there, and Nasty Gal's not going out there saying we're a fully sustainable brand and we know everything about sustainability. Like I said earlier, you know, this is changing all the time. I think what we need to do is just be open and honest with our customers and say, we're not going to get it right every time, but please, you know, join us on this journey. Understand where we're trying to go. Talk to us. Tell us what you like and what you don't like. What do you want to see more of? What do you not want to see more of? You know, we've got nearly 5 million followers on Instagram, about 40 million followers across the group. And those guys will tell you if they don't like something. So we listen, you know, listen, learn, take those comments on board. We're a customer-led business and we're about trying to react to what our customers want. And I guess that's what keeps us ahead. So it's listening. And I think it's just being open and honest and being vulnerable and saying, listen, we're not going to get it right every time, but we're really trying our best here to improve things for ourselves, for the production, the retail production world, the fashion world. And, you know, if we all work together, we can produce more sustainable product, which ultimately will be much better for the planet.
To what extent is your sustainability push focused on being, I guess, more data-driven in terms of your production and producing based on demand, like not too much of product? Have you always been really data-driven in terms of the quantity of product produced to kind of meet demand? Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, we were quite different as a group, you know, versus a large retailer out there that has global stores. Because we're an online business, we sort of say it's the test and repeat model. So we only buy very low quantities. And again, that's, you know, there's a sustainable message there. We don't have hundreds of thousands of units that don't sell sat around sort of collecting dust. We'll only buy 200, 500, 1,000 units of each line. And if it doesn't sell, it means then we're not left with thousands and thousands of units left over, which potentially could go, you know, could get placed in the wrong hands. So we only will produce a couple of hundred units usually of each item anyway. So for us, again, that's another sort of part of the sustainability program. And the strategy is, you know, don't buy too many, because actually if the customer doesn't want that, then, you know, you're not left with hundreds and thousands of items left over.
For sure. Do you think that the future of fashion is circular? I know that you also have a recycle program. You have a recycling program in the UK. Is this going to take off and be an international offering? And yeah, do you think that's where fashion is going?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are looking at partners globally to help reinforce that message. And I think a lot of what we do across our marketing channels is really sort of encouraging our customers to upcycle or, you know, eBay or things like that. You know, research that we did last year has showed to us across the group, you know, landfill is the absolute last option for our customers. And they're actually, you know, really in tune with this. They'd rather donate to friends or, like I say, you know, go on their own Depop store or things like that. So, you know, definitely that's something that we encourage. And that's what we spend a lot of time in trying to push the message of how do you take that denim jacket and embellish it and wear it next season, or, you know, cut those jeans into a pair of denim hot pants for a festival. So a lot of what we do is to really start try and push that message as well.
Yeah. Are some things too trendy, I guess? Where are your customers getting their trend inspiration? Is it on TikTok? And when it comes to investing in a trend via product, are you kind of weighing that sustainability message, like saying this is going to be a one-hit wonder, we're never going to see this again, do we go there? Is that a discussion as well?
Not really. I mean, we have Nasty Gal in particular, we have a part of our range called Nasty Gal Icons, which are a lot of, references from bygone eras, you know, sort of vintage references and things like that. And there are more sort of premium products. And what we find is we've actually got customers from Nasty Gal when it first opened in 15 years ago that are still wearing those products now, which is amazing. You know, it's great to see that. And we get a lot of people like tag us on social media. And so I think, you know, what we find is our customers will reuse and recycle. And even if it is a real, you know, trend-led product, that will still stay in their wardrobe and be reused. Maybe it might be 5-10 years later, but it'll make an appearance someday.
Well, what channels are you focused on right now? I thought it was so interesting that you were saying you have a different strategy for Instagram versus Pinterest versus, do you have a specific strategy for LinkedIn? You mentioned LinkedIn and my ears perked up.
I mean, LinkedIn is actually, we were just in a meeting about this before, we were saying how it's a real sort of like education platform, and we are seeing a lot of young people. And again, I don't know whether it links back to COVID of people being sat at home, unemployment, you know, looking for career opportunities, but we're finding really good engagement on our LinkedIn channel. And actually people wanting to sort of get that education there and learn about the industry and what's happening and what trends are developing. So, you know, LinkedIn is a great sort of avenue for us to push our messages.
How great. And Instagram, is she shopping directly off the platform? What are you finding there in terms of social commerce and the potential?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, we find a lot of traffic comes to our site from Instagram. But the same, you know, funnily, Pinterest is a huge platform for us as well, which you wouldn't naturally sort of associate with a fashion brand, but very different type of customer on Pinterest to Instagram. And then again, to TikTok. So I suppose it's about making sure you're covering all bases, but understanding that the customers on those platforms are quite different and want to consume content in different ways.
Yeah, are you tackling TikTok via, we're hearing a lot of brands doing these challenges, but also letting the influencer or the TikTok user really speak on behalf of the brand. Are you guys posting yourselves, or are you using more user-generated content? Yeah. Talk me through that TikTok strategy.
Yeah, a little bit of both. But, you know, I guess for us, we're quite selective with who we work with. So we would only, you know, work with someone who we feel really sort of represents our brand. And, you know, I think that then gives a little bit more of assurance and confidence that the person will reflect the brand in the right way. But yeah, we do both, really.
You have a unique content strategy per platform, like you said. Is your customer, more of your customer, your larger audience on one platform over another?
I'd say Instagram's probably our biggest.
Okay, great.
And we're finding, you know, our customer's probably mid-20s. So, you know, obviously we've got the younger end probably more on TikTok, the older end on Pinterest, but the majority of customers, I'd say, probably come to site through our Instagram.
Yeah. Did you guys add any bells and whistles to your website, your e-commerce site, over the last year and a half as everybody was doing kind of virtual showrooms and virtual stylists? And I mean, who's to say if those are going to stick? But any newness there?
Not so much on the website. We've just gone live with a new site design last week, actually, which is our first update since we acquired the brand back in 2017. And it's got some sort of nice updated functionality. I suppose probably the place we did more of the live activity was on Instagram. I think, you know, most brands did the same. But I think we got to a point where after about 6 months, everyone was just a little bit bored, you know, and I think we're all in the same boat, aren't we? And, you know, everyone's just desperate for something new. So we've stepped away from that a little bit and just got back to a normalized social strategy, really. But, you know, that's where most of our live experiences lived.
What about physical retail? I know back in the day I visited your LA store, but since our pop-ups worthy of, I guess, dabbling in, or what are you focused on there?
Yeah, I mean, pop-ups, we love doing pop-ups. We've done quite a few globally. I mean, not so much in the last 18 months, but it's definitely on the agenda for this year. And we love getting out and meeting people in different markets and taking the product to them and showing them what we're all about. But really, you know, the true essence of the business and the group is to operate as an online business only. And going back to what we were talking about earlier on in the conversation, you know, that's where it allows us to be so much more agile and reactive. You know, we're not tied into 6 months worth of product ordered ahead and point of sale collateral where, you know, for example, if we think it's going to be a heat wave and all of a sudden it goes really cold, we can remerch our sites to react to that. Whereas if we had a bricks and mortar store, we just can't do that. So we're very much, you know, aligned with the group is an online platform, but we do take our brand offline at times in more of a pop-up environment to interact a bit more sort of personally with our customers.
What are you focused on right now beyond sustainability for 2021, let's say?
So in real life experiences,
yes.
Definitely. I think we're all desperate to just see people, talk to people, and take the brand, you know, out on the road, get to some festivals. I think you know, festival fashion, street style, things like that, just what people are wearing right now. And I think probably the big thing for us is actually getting our teams back together, you know, when it's safe to do so. We've really, you know, we're a really social company. We've got a very young sort of workforce globally, and the social part of their jobs is so important to them. So, you know, I think getting our teams back in, and especially, you know, in a marketing role, you know, Zoom and Microsoft Teams are great, but there's only so much collaborating you can do online. I think nothing is better than face-to-face interaction with people. So it'll be great to have our teams back. And for me personally, I think I've not been able to travel out to see the team in the US since January 2020. I'm desperate to see them. I'm desperate to just sort of live and breathe the market and see what's happening in the market. And, you know, it'd be great to sort of see people face-to-face.
Yes. Is everyone going back to the office, or is it a little bit of a mix.
Yeah, we're just sort of a couple of days in and, you know, just trying to keep things as safe as possible and when it's the right time to do so. But, you know, I know the teams are desperate to sort of see their friends and their colleagues. So it'll be nice when, you know, we can all have some time together.
Yeah. Where are the teams now? UK, New York?
UK, LA, Paris, Sydney, London. So...
amazing.
Yeah, we spread it all over the show.
Yes, for sure. And if you said, like, are you leaning more into back to parties, back to events, or in terms of your messaging, or travel is where it's at right now? Is there a good balance?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about vacation shops and summer. And in the UK, for example, today we've had a lot of our restrictions lifted. So we've got a big message around people going out, but it varies by territory. Obviously, we wouldn't serve that message up to our Australian customers, for example, who have just gone back into lockdown. So we do alter our messaging globally to ensure it, you know, it's sensitive and relevant for each market.
Yeah, for sure. Gosh, I feel like your brand would be so... I don't know, suited to like a Depop with all of your vintage. Have you done any of those style of partnerships, maybe with, just a retailer or a resale? Go ahead.
We've actually just launched about 3 months ago. We launched a Depop shop.
Oh, hey.
With all of our, you know, with samples and things like that from our studio. So we were working with some influencers to front that for us. So yeah, that's a sort of ongoing part of our strategy to have our own. We've got our own Depop shop that is operational.
Okay. Hey, I swear to God, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Many things going on here.
We are so in sync. Oh my gosh. Well, I you're inspiring me to look on your site and look at your vintage, because I kind of forgot that was happening. So hello.
No, I mean, it's an incredible part, you know, and we've wanted to keep that going, and definitely the customer loves the vintage side of the business. So, you know, it made natural sense for us to evolve that sustainable product offering. And, you know, so far, so good.
Is it more about the 80s or the 90s or a different era?
Well, it changes all the time. You know, it's a bit of Diana Ross inspiration one day and Cher the next. So
amazing. Well, Kelly, thank you so much for being here today. This was so fun.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
That's all for this episode. Our theme music is by Otis McDonald. Be sure to give us a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to the Glossy Podcast. See you next week.